Good morning, everybody, and welcome. Ashumi, thank you for having us. We have a really exciting panel to kick off, I guess, with the first larger group of the day. We're going to be talking about fashion, art, and culture on the blockchain. And just to quickly introduce myself, my name is Ashley MacDonald. I'm Irish, if you couldn't tell from my accent. I was actually really, really lucky because I started my career as an intern in Ian Rogers' team. So even if I only absorbed 1% of what he was saying during those 6 months, it helped me vastly. So I started my career at LVMH. I spent a couple of years at Dior. Then I moved to Google, which was actually on the advice of Ian. Spend some time in tech if you really want to learn about luxury and tech. So had a bit of a culture shock, I think, actually going from LVMH to Google, but learned a lot and managed the LVMH portfolio. So it was nice to have friends on the other side. And around 3 years ago, I joined a group called Pooch, which nobody knows how to say. It's spelled P-U-I-G. I called it Puig myself before, but it's a Spanish group. A beautiful company that has many fashion and beauty brands. And I also have a podcast. So that's why I'm here, I think, as an interviewer today. And I'm really happy to have a very esteemed panel in front of me. So before we dive in with the questions, I wanted to give a bit of an intro to give some context as to what all of our panelists have been doing over the last years and what they're doing today. So I'll start with you, Jean-Michel. You are the co-founder and chief investment officer of Grail Capital, but you have a really rich experience in finance as well and in more the classical side of finance, New York Stock Exchange and whatnot, and at Euronext. And you want to help people invest in digital assets. So we're going to dive into that because I think it's something that is really important to the whole ecosystem, especially if we speak with people like Ismail, who is you were a member and now CEO of CPG, really cool name, crypto packaged goods, and also the founder of Trame, which is a gallery but also a platform to assist designers and artists moving into the digital space. We also have Stephanie, who is co-founder and co-owner of PJPP. Are there any members here actually of PJPP? Private Jet Pajama Party, yes. I can't wait to ask you questions and find out if people do really wear pajamas on their private jets a little bit. Very mysterious. So we'll be diving in deep with those questions. And last but not least, we have Danny, who is really quite a remarkable person. We've spoken almost every day this week, actually. So here I am again with more questions. Danny is the founder of Drop, which is a digital fashion platform. And she was really early in the digital fashion space, so started writing about digital fashion in 2020. She's also a digital fashion influencer. So think of being a fashion influencer, but wearing digital fashion. So you need to check out her Instagram account. And you can see very tangibly there what that looks like. And she'll actually tell you at the end how you can be dressed by her. And fun fact, I said I had to share this, she was the first person to sell a piece of digital fashion at Christie's. So yeah, you'll have to tell us more about that as well. Okay, so let's dive in with the questions. Jean-Michel, I'm going to start with you because when we think of blockchain, we often think of finance and crypto. You come from a finance background and you're now facilitating people to invest in digital assets. So can you tell me what are you doing and what problem are you solving?
Well, actually, I think it's good that we have this panel just after Ian, because actually, I think he covered most of the thing I was about to say, so I would just refer to him. And by the way, I had the chance to work with Ian a little bit more than you, because I was a manager as well as Ledger, so we worked with Ian and Pascal before. Actually, I'm always looking at things at a very high level, and if you look at... investing, and I'm actually an enabler. So Grail Capital is an investment and advisory firm that is enabling the digital art and culture on blockchain as an asset class. But asset class seems to be a trivial financial world, but it's not, because actually everything we do, and even the contemporary art, and even the fashion, the brand, etc., it's a market. So I try to get through the financial angle. Even though, in the end, what matters is the cultural aspect and the cultural impact of everything we are doing in this room, whether it's fashion, brand, culture, art, generally speaking. So that's really what we do. And basically, our kind of tagline is that we are there to make people and institutions invest in the $1 trillion market in a decade from now. And just to provide you with this figure, right now, the digital art market on Ethereum is a $7 billion market. So very tiny and probably much bigger in a decade.
Thank you. Can you tell me a little bit about who you work with? Like, who are your clients? Who do you actually help on a day-to-day basis?
So we are early. We are early, and it's a very young market, a very small market. And it's funny because I was, you know, after finance, I moved into fintech and then into what we were not calling crypto, so Bitcoin and stuff. And the market cap of Bitcoin in March 2014, so almost 10 years ago, was $6 billion. And again, I just mentioned that the digital art market on blockchain is $7 billion. So, and right now, Bitcoin is $1 trillion, if not mistaken, so that's not bad. So actually, just, and the kind of people I'm talking to are exactly the same people I would have talked to 10 years ago with Bitcoin. The only difference, so there's a big financial component, a big investment component. But the good thing, and that's what I prefer doing that instead of investing in tokens or Web3 projects as a VC or whatsoever, is because the cultural aspect for me is actually so important. It's what makes us, you know, people, human. And especially in the digital area with AI and generative, et cetera, et cetera. And so those people who are investing on institutions are relatively thought leaders and, you know, Web3 entrepreneurs and financiers and lawyers and people who care and understand that this tiny little thing can become a huge, huge thing from a cultural angle. And that basically we are in a district where there's a lot of museums around us, that a lot of those museums in 5, 10, 15 years will have those artworks. So they want to be early, and they just want to do just like, you know, 120 years ago or something, where the impressionist people, and you were investing, you know, in whatever artists that you would do extremely well, and both financially and culturally. So that's the kind of people I'm talking to right now.
Thank you. Of course, that wouldn't exist if the digital art wasn't there to actually invest in, which brings me to you, Ismail, because this is exactly what you're doing. You're facilitating artists and designers to actually create and to showcase through both CPG and through Trame. So can you tell me a little bit about how you work with artists?
Sure. So my name is Ismail. I was born and raised in Morocco. For me, I come from a family that is about education, culture, and craftsmanship. And to me, Trame is about on-chain, off-screen art and design. So on-chain, digital provenance, off-screen, physical pieces. That's what we do. We work with artists in order to enable them express their creative vision both digitally and physically from day one. And that is what we believe is going to be the future of creation. So with Jeff Davis, we went to Chartres, Atelier Loire. He learned about the stained glass. He learned about how it is made. We made with Bruno, amazing, amazing craftsman. In France, we protect craftsmanship and we call it métier d'art when it reaches a certain level. And so I pair and create concepts where I pair generative artists with métier d'art in order to create these pieces and the next step for generative art. So I'm a big fan of generative art. I think we are going to unleash generative art potential through the physical space. And that's what I did in Venice, in Chartres, Aubusson, and with Maison Drucker. You will see it in our booth with our blocks at NFT Paris. So that's for Trame. CPG, I was a holder. I minted CPG pop day one. Everything went to shit. And we... And the early vision of Chris Cantino, amazing guy with whom we partnered to do the generative tapestry at Aubusson. He has an early vision. Now I took over end last year. It's a great community that I belong to since day one, and we have a new vision, and CPG is for consumer goods. So Trame is art and design high-end. CPG is to partner with brands for consumer goods. We have amazing conversations, and that's how I think generative art is going to impact our daily life, both from an art perspective, design perspective, and also retail. So we're having a lot of conversations with brands, and we're going to do drops that are for the CPG community.
Thank you, Ismail. So we have the financing side, we have what you're actually buying in terms of art, but what is missing, well, there's two things missing, but one really core component of all this is community. You need to have people who are interested in this. And that's when I come to you, Stephanie, because you are, of course, co-owner now of PJPP, which is an incredible community and quite a luxury audience as well. So could you tell me a little bit about what is Private Jet Pajama Party and what type of members do you have? What are their values?
Well, I'm glad you kind of said what PJPP stands for. It's Private Jet Pajama Party. So yes, there is some pajama wearing in private planes. But initially, it was a profile picture, a photo project. And my husband and I acquired it and created a digital membership community. I personally feel like in the Web3 space, I'm a mother of three. I'm not into this, into this industry in terms of these incredible visual people here. But I'm very intrigued, and I love community. And what's incredible about creating this digital membership club is the connections and the network that we're making now. That's what my husband and I saw in the opportunity of buying PJPP, and this was last year. So we have exclusive events, incredible curated competitions like golf, karting, and I think this is a really incredible way of a community rather than just a one-night event and meeting people, a really way to interact with others through this particular NFT project. So it's extremely exciting, but I would say the most important thing for us is community. And we have over 4,900 members. And what is very unique from a woman's perspective too is almost nearly 50-50 men to female. So it's a very exciting time for me personally as well to get involved within this industry and to learn a lot more. But coming from the side of an investor, and what PJPP has to offer in our community. And obviously we're here to open it out to a further network as well. So I hope that answers it.
Absolutely. It's really interesting to see now as well. It's like a new wave of mergers and acquisitions. Like acquiring a community is not something we would have thought about previously.
No, exactly. Well, I think that was the point. My husband and I were, big holders. We were very intrigued. What we saw in this project was the community. And we wanted to save a community when at the time people just wanted to take the capital out and say goodbye. So for us, it's the importance of network and meeting very like-minded individuals like we have in the room today. So thank you.
Thank you. And now, last but not least, fashion. This is something that I'm really, really interested in as well as someone with a background in the industry. But the same challenging question that I get all the time, I'm going to give to you today. So why is digital fashion relevant?
So I think at an absolute baseline, and I assume this is something that everybody sitting in the room today understands, we have a growing digital identity. So 60% of Gen Z believe that actually the way that they present online is more important than the way they present in their physical lives. And I think something that I've been saying for quite a while is a couple of years ago, we had this massive hype around the metaverse, and there was a lot of critique or pushback around, I'm not going to have an online life. The way that I present physically is the way that I present. And I think what's very funny is actually, no, that's not true. In reality, we operate in a way that is increasingly curated towards social media. And what's important about social media today, or Web2 native social media, such as Instagram or TikTok or Snapchat, is what you're doing is you are taking a curated selection of moments from your physical life and you're bringing them onto the internet. Whereas what we're going to increasingly move into is actually being able to create that identity from the bottom up. But that is not to say that it doesn't exist already today and it hasn't been pervasive for the past, let's say, 5 to 10 years. So I think that's kind of the very simple explanation of why digital fashion is important. But I think to kind of tie it back to a little bit of what we've already started discussing, I think the way that digital fashion is actually going to evolve is people understanding what it means for digital fashion to be its own medium. So it's in the same way that when we transitioned from theater to television, you began by doing plays on the TV. Whereas now we've skyrocketed to a point where we have shows broadcast for television, and now we have TikTok, which is its own completely unique format. And we're going to see the exact same thing with digital fashion. So what Drop believes and what I really believe is, in the same way that fashion is not only celebrated for its particular aesthetic, but also for the craftsmanship behind it. Digital fashion is also going to become celebrated for the digitally native craft that underlies it, and it's what Ishma is doing so beautifully with Tram, and it's what we also believe in with Drop, and I think that's going to be a very interesting paradigm shift that we start experiencing in the future moving forward.
I've heard you say a couple of times that code is couture when it comes to digital fashion. Who is actually wearing digital fashion today in terms of demographics? Do you have stats on, you know, what particular markets or online communities are really interested in this, and where is the opportunity for fashion designers in particular to decide, do I want to be also present online?
So the way that I always think about this is I think that digital fashion can be segmented into three different categories, and each of those categories pertains to its own consumer group. So the first category is IRL, which is in real life digital fashion. And that is quite simply any physical fashion piece with a digital counterpart. And you can call it digital, you can call it whatever you like, but it's quite simply that. And so that can be anything from digital design used to produce physical products. So Adidas has been doing this with its trainers from 2007, for example. It's not actually that novel. But we've also seen this rise in digital physical products. So NFC chips. We've actually got Alexia, who is doing a pretty interesting project, which is in stealth at the moment, which is in that field, as well as people like G Money, people like Tribute Brand. And it's this idea of having a connected asset, maybe for the purposes of authentication, maybe for a shared digital physical identity. And I think for quite a lot of people, particularly those who are millennial and older, this is quite an easy gateway into purely digital fashion, because maybe they aren't big social media users, or maybe it still doesn't click for them. But if they're just buying physicals, and, oh, I can authenticate that, or, oh, maybe there's a bit of a digital identity I can explore, that's an easy way to do it. I think then the second category, and this is a category that I personally am very interested in, is this idea of ORL, or on real life digital fashion. And so what that is it's quite simply any piece of digital fashion that can be worn on your image online. So AR filters, also digital renders or digital tailoring, which is what we're doing at the moment. And quite frankly, I think that's for the Web 2 social media generation. So Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat. For me, what was very exciting is I adore fashion. I spend a lot of my time watching the couture shows. You know, things like the Doja Cat moment were so significant to me, but I can watch it, but how do I participate? And all of a sudden with digital fashion, your barrier to entry to become a participant and wear something that is so extraordinary and that can also connect you to those brands is lowered basically pretty much to zero. So for me, that's the social media generation. I think there is a massive potential for the influencer market, as well as people who just want to experiment with style. So that's the kind of the second category. And then the third category is URL, or unreal life digital fashion. And that now pertains to the hundreds of millions of gamers. You know, Roblox is growing colossally, Fortnite. Over the pandemic, what was fascinating and what is very interesting to me is I think the nerdy gamer stereotype is very much becoming obsolete rapidly. Look at who's been in Roblox. Everyone now, from Tommy Hilfiger to Gucci, Net-a-Porter created an island in Animal Crossing. And increasingly, Gen Z and Gen Alpha, this is where they're spending their time. When I first started talking about digital fashion to my family in 2020, the parents were like, what on earth are you talking about? And all the kids who are my cousins who were 8, 9, 10 were like, oh, of course. And you have kids now asking for $200, $300 skins for Christmas. So that's the kind of tiering I see. And obviously we have a generation becoming increasingly comfortable with their digital identity, but I don't actually think we need to wait for them for this market to proliferate.
Thank you. I love your passion and enthusiasm, but also expertise in this space. And I know you've been writing about digital fashion since 2020. So you've been putting it out there publicly as well, and also educating people a lot on this space. So thank you for that really in-depth and detailed answer. And They're the three spaces that I've been looking at as well for quite some time, and it'll be interesting to see how this becomes scaled. Like, when will digital fashion become something scalable? But we'll talk about that more later. Jean-Michel, if I come back to you, digital fashion, is it something you're wearing?
As you can see, not exactly. I know Ismail very well, and I was kind of, okay, just before we went on the panel, I said, okay, we have to have a black pair of jeans and a little beard to be on stage today, but hopefully we have some.
I actually own a digital fashion. I bought a piece from Linda Dunia that she did with Drop. It's fucking amazing. The concept, everything, and it's the first piece I bought, and my wife was super proud. So it's something that I'm going to show to my kids, and I'm sure they're going to be proud of me buying a piece.
You didn't buy the piece from Christie's, did you?
No, I bought directly the Drop one, yeah.
No, I totally, no, so basically that way, what we believe in is like digital art and culture, and I always bring back and had culture, because yes, we are talking about art and collectible in digital form. And again, I'm not an expert because I don't come from that industry, but I'm sure that a very special dress from Yves Saint Laurent from 1962, a unique one, is probably worth the price of a painting, you know? And yes, it wouldn't surprise me if in a couple of years, maybe before, depending on what our investors are eager to invest in, we invest in digital fashion. As soon as it's rare, special, and get into museums around, you know, in the medium to long term. Because again, everything we do, we say, okay, we want it to enter a museum in 5 to 10 years, sometimes a little bit after. So yes, we'll be going into digital fashion for sure.
It's going to be really interesting to see how the space evolves, because it's just the beginning. We've been saying that for quite some time, but it really is early stage. Stephanie, if I come back to you, because something that you have a background in as well is in the luxury industry, and in particular with a focus on the Middle East, which is really growing quite fast. So I'd love to know more about how you intend to combine a luxury brand partnership potentially in the future with PJPP, because I know it's something you're looking into for the future for your members.
Definitely, and already we do have a few partnerships. I don't know if I'm loud enough on this microphone, by the way. Over the past year, especially when it comes to the fact that we are promoting in our community, we have a lot of core value and interest in golf, not myself, but we have a lot, the watch industry, after having a baby, by the way, I'm 4 months postpartum, my brain does not function, so sometimes if I have a little stop, that's why. But we have a very exciting, I think what I want to express from my personal understanding, because this is a partnership between my husband and I, is that in the Web3 space particularly, I feel like there was quite a barrier to entry for someone like me. And what I find exciting about PJPP community is that we are super inclusive in the sense that, yes, we enjoy the finer things of life, which gives us a very unique opportunity with luxury brands, in the sense of, I think initially, luxury brands have this idea of our community as, you know, a particular vision, and it's a very niche community, but instead, it's so extremely inclusive. And just how you're saying about the next generation, I think it's going to be the new way that luxury brands are going to have to tap into their new consumer. And what we're seeing within our community is that we have that base and that kind of integrity to be able to inform luxury brands that they're in the right direction, especially heritage brands that really care about, you know, their history. And, you know, it's not just something, you know, it's not a fad, because initially NFT projects, people thought it was going to be a complete fad. Or, for instance, Roblox, you were talking about Roblox, my 7-year-old is obsessed. So these, you know, at first it went straight over my head. But yeah, so they see that there's a longevity of this industry, and a community like PJPP, we have that long view, and to ensure that we can, A, as a digital membership club, can give some great perks to our members. So once they buy the NFT, they're then, you know, included in whatever partnerships that we're able to get at the time. For instance, we have coming up this year, last year we did a summer retreat in Spain, in Marbella. which was fun. Rather than a night event, meeting people and drinking excessive amounts of alcohol, we had a three-day event where we got to know our community through, there was yoga, all sorts of amazing activities, karting, because I think when people get competition, they get to, you get to know someone, really, when you compete against them and things. But this year, for instance, we're doing something at Goodwood, and Aston Martin are willing to partner with us, which is an incredible step for us. So yeah, I see this as a really incredible opportunity to bring like-minded individuals for luxury brands and premium, and all sorts of, an inclusive, it is an inclusive industry from both sides. So yeah, it's super exciting. And then from the Middle East perspective, I was living in Iran, which for people was a complete, you know, it was an incredible experience. It's an incredible how this is a huge global community and super inclusive, and I'm very looking forward to the future. So,
what would the dream partnership be?
Oh, so I was talking about this on the Eurostar yesterday. So it's not just my idea, right? So I have to speak to my partner. So I don't want to say, but Laura Piana is our is up there for us. More for the fact, I want to explain why. As I was saying, there's this initial understanding with luxury brands that people involved in the Web3 community are a particular niche community and not the typical demographic, for instance, to their particular brand. But that is not the case with our community. It is, as I was saying, super inclusive and is opening up to people that are not involved in Web3 specifically. I can say that as myself. I was a consumer of this project before we owned it. So I feel like we can give that angle to the other side. And with Laura Piana, it is at that peak. The integrity, the lifestyle, it kind of suits our audience who love the, you know, golf, all different experiences, racing. That's our goal. So hopefully, we've been close with a company called Cease, which is owned by the family already. We're looking forward to it.
Really interesting. I think it's important for these kind of collaborations to happen, because otherwise, it's like you said, it's not accessible or it's not on the radar. And a big challenge that luxury brands have today is, why would we enter the Web3 space if our customers are not there? We either have to educate our current customers on Web3 and facilitate their entry, or we have to try and develop a new luxury consumer within the Web3 space. So,
and I think they can do vice versa, and I think that's what makes us as a community very, very unique, that it is a very broad spectrum of people in all different industries. I mean, when I bought my NFT, I was sitting in the bath relaxing, and I was like, oh my gosh, I want to be involved in this community, and it was a huge rush. So it's a very exciting time for both brands, people within Web3 and the general consumer of luxury goods and throughout the whole sector. So,
thank you. Ismail, I'm going to take it back to you. Could you tell me just like one example of a success story that you've had with Tram bringing an artist into the digital space? Because that's not an easy feat.
So we take generative artists to the physical space and the craftsmen to Web3. I think, the first collection last year, generative tapestries in Aubusson. Same time last year, we showed the creative process and the prototype at Le Bon Marché. So many hurdles. And Alexis André, Mac Tuitui on Twitter, he's also known for friendship bracelets, our blog's friendship bracelets, among many other collections. He's a genius. I mean, the level of craftsmanship in the code is insane. He lived in Tokyo. So I call him and I say, let's weave tapestry in Aubusson. Okay, so he did Tokyo, Aubusson. He landed in Paris. I picked him up. We drove 5 hours. We went to Aubusson, and I knew the Aubusson. I have a large network of craftsmen, so I had their trust. And it was amazing days. He got to know the weaving, how we make colors, everything. And at the same time, it coincided with the Miyazaki tapestry being finished. So he was there. And it was broadcasted on Japanese TV at the same time, etc. So those are amazing moments that we try to share through our videos and pictures and so on. And then we did the events at Le Bon Marché with CPG and our blocks. And then we did the sale beginning of March, so bear market. And the first 8 tapestries were a bundle, so digital and physical. And we sold the first, these 8 tapestries in less than 30 minutes. So for me, I tick all boxes, and that's what I want. I want cultural relevance and viably commercial projects. That's, to me, how we truly evangelize, because if you go to an artist and you tell him, we're going to go to Aubusson, we're going to make amazing tapestry, etc., and then it doesn't sell, not good. You talk to Aubusson, you tell him, I'm going to bring you on Web3, we're going to weave code, we're going to produce in series unique tapestries, etc., and then doesn't sell, not good. And that's why I think the power of generative craft, as I call it, is expanding the commercial potential of collections. Seth Goldstein was mentioned our last collection that we are unveiling now, generative bistro chairs made by Maison Drucker. Maison Drucker is 139 years old. They made the best bistro chairs. If you go to Café de Flore, it's a Maison Drucker bistro chair. If you mint a Randalash and Tram inlays collection at Prime Moment, you get a unique design and we'll weave for you your unique French bistro chair by Maison Drucker. So if you see now this culturally relevant, amazing, etc. If you see all collections at Prime Moment, the mint pass was 0.1 ETH, 100 mints, 10 ETH, and all of them are going to be 10 ETH primary. But for Tram, if you order the chair, that's extra revenues. So the collection is actually expanding the revenues, and it's good for the artists, good for everyone involved. So that's what I think physical generative art is truly how it's going to, like, we just scratched the surface of generative art, and I think as we go to physicals, it's going to be something we're going to see some, we're going to live with this daily.
Thank you. A lot of excitement,
yeah.
Which we need. We need lots of energy to bring these projects to life and to bring people from the Web3 world and from companies that are 139 years old. It's not easy. No one speaks the same language in that room. Danny, if I bring it back to you and how people can get dressed by you, because I think this is an easy way for everyone in the room today to wear digital fashion for the first time, you as well, Jean-Michel. So how can people get involved? I know you have a project at the moment that's really accessible for people.
So I think as Ishma really brought to life, I think over the past 2 years, we had a bit of a false start in terms of digital fashion, digital art, and its integration into culture. We had two and a half years where every single place that you looked, there was a mention of NFTs, there was a mention of the metaverse. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of that was actually driven by FOMO and financialization. I think for quite a lot of us who are true evangelists and really, really believe in the space, we were so excited that we didn't even view it cynically. I was like, okay, you know, I knew this was going to happen. It's happened about 5 years sooner than I expected, but I knew this was going to happen. People are clearly excited for the exact same reasons as me. It wasn't true. Even the other day, I was in the hairdresser and I was reading Dazed and Confused. There was like a 4-page spread on NFTs. I was like, as if we would see that now. So I think we had a bit of a false start culturally. And I think it is so important for us now to focus on making this culture. And so I love the work that Ishma does because he's marrying the old-fashioned high design craft that those who are attending the design fairs in Milan, for example, or in Paris, understand, whilst also bringing in these digital components. So he's making a culture through his integration of physicality, through this marriage of the old and the new and what old craft is, what new craft is, and I think that is absolutely integral. I personally have really kind of set my hill to die on as digital-only fashion. I know how it made me feel the first time I wore a digital fashion piece. I know why it is so significant to me. And I think what was interesting was when we first started Drop, we looked at the market and we saw that the people who really appreciated digital craft were actually the digital art community. So those who are excited about communities like Art Blocks, Bright Moments, who really had that innate understanding that code could be high craft in the art space, in the design space, etc. And so we didn't actually go in a direction where we were digitally dressing people, despite the fact that that was what really engaged me and how it started. And in November and December, I thought about it, and I was like, you know what? I really want to continue to work on making this culture. It's fantastic that we have such a brilliant collector group who've used this as high art, but hopefully Ishma's going to wear his piece, but I have some other collectors who have spent a lot of money on our work, but they're never going to wear our pieces. So we decided this year to really focus on digital dressing, engaging people in the way that I was initially engaged, alongside this generative craft component. And so 2 weeks ago, we launched a collection called Feed.
Beautiful one.
Thank you. The idea is, it is a series of completely unique pieces inspired by the internet. So the first dress that we created was called the Feed dress. It's made of glass test tubes, which feed Instagram likes through it. The next piece was a swipe suit. We released it on Valentine's Day. It looks like it swiped to the right. And for the next couple of months, anyone who applies to wear a drop piece through our Instagram, which is pronounced drop, we will digitally dress you in that piece until we release a new piece, at which point the first piece gets airdropped to one of our existing collectors. And really what I'm trying to achieve with that, and something that I've been super excited by, is in the week and a half, 2 weeks, we've already had over 120 applications from people to get dressed. And that is not just the digital fashion community. It's musicians, it's influencers, it's models being engaged with this. It's this cultural moment where all of a sudden you should be seeing everywhere on your feed people wearing digital fashion. And it's going to take some time to really get it to then saturate culture. But for me, that is how we move forward. So if anybody wants to get digitally dressed, head to Pronounce Drop, and you can apply to wear our latest piece and we'll dress you. And at the moment, it is completely for free. But for me, that is how you get digital culture into the mainstream.
Everything that Danny is talking about, I actually conceptually obviously agreed on everything, but I felt what she's talking about in Marfa when she dressed me with one of her pieces. So we went to Art Blocks open house in Marfa together and Ian actually and it was fun. She dressed everyone. She dressed me, and I never got I got the highest engagement on that from when she dressed me, and it was amazing. So I really encourage everyone to try it just for fun once and share it with relatives and friends.
It's
really cool.
I'm sold as well, by the way. I'm talking to you after this. Hopefully you get
Jean-Michel,
a lot more
would you like to
applications.
Try?
Hopefully.
It's happening. We had a quick conversation about this yesterday as well. I think for digital fashion to become mainstream today, it has to live on Web 2, so it has to live off the blockchain. And it seems like you're taking a step back, so away from Web 3, away from Metaverse, and saying, actually, I'm going to dress you, but I hope you're going to post it on Instagram or X or wherever it is, because that's how you're going to reach people. And then the people you dress also become your marketers and your ambassadors, right?
It's exactly that. And I think the final thing that I think is very interesting is all of our pieces from the last year are generative. They're created with generative algorithms. So every single one of those pieces is completely unique. So Ishma, for example, he owns a piece. There were 48 pieces in the collection, but his is completely unique.
And it's the first mint.
And it was actually the first mint.
Mint zero,
which is,
yeah.
Which is insane. And so let's say, Ashley, you wear Ishma's piece. And let's say Ishma manages to get through you 100,000 views on a social media platform. We've seen this, first of all, with the NFTs that became valuable in the last cycle. It was this idea of provenance, this idea of cultural connection. But also in the physical vintage space, if your piece has been worn by Kate Moss or been part of a viral video, that increases the value. So it gives this interplay now.
I'm not selling my piece.
No?
It belongs to a museum. Sorry,
Jean-Michel,
but also
is
digital
go
fashion
into a museum.
Belongs to
you
museum.
You can rent it to me, it's okay.
But exactly. So, but you could get it rented or worn, and that could increase the cultural clout of your piece without you actually having to be the sole wearer. So I think there's a very interesting dynamic that can be played off between the collector market and actually the wearer market at this point through having generative digital fashion, which is what we create, but that is also wearable.
Thank you. I'm going to wrap it up there and check if anyone from the audience has any questions. But first, thank you so much for giving so much passion and energy. You're also, you're big experts in what you do, but you're from four very different elements of the blockchain. And to have you all together on stage at the same time, it was really interesting to see how you all hopefully will collaborate together in the future as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Yes.
Hello, everyone. My name is Raul Tabiera. I have a question for Stephanie. How far will PJPP go beyond inclusivity when it comes to its community members? And how important is alignment with PJPP values?
Okay, so thank you for that. Thank you very much. No, I feel when I talk about inclusivity, I feel there's a lot of barriers to entry within this market for people that are not Web3, Web2 based. And I want to make sure, in my personal point of view, I can only say it for me, is the fact that I want to educate more people how they can get involved. I feel like we live in a world where social media, for instance, is an incredible way to connect with other people, but it's also a really scary time. I have three young daughters. It really freaks me out what they're seeing day to day. But also, you know, and also understanding the value yourself and having those interpersonal relationships. So we're looking at something like the NFT project that is Web3 based, it's virtual, but then we're all about, I say it's IRL, right? The interconnections with people, and through these incredible events that we're continuing to do, there is no barriers to entry to anyone can go and buy the NFT now. They will be part of the community Discord. We have, I think there's over 500 members every day talking on Discord. I wish I had the time for it. Sometimes I don't, but it's an incredible thing. You can be this person from, I'm seeing from this virtual world, but then also so inclusive when it comes together, and people are just, you're all there in this new incredible space. And it's super exciting. So I feel like that's what I mean by it. I personally want to educate more people in getting involved within this industry, whether that's as a consumer, whether it's a meeting up. I mean, for us, we're actually setting up an investment club. So a way of, before, people would have no idea how to invest in startups. How about a mom breastfeeding can go and go and invest in something, but she knows how, that this is the thing that I feel that we can do. And from all sorts, there is a barriers to entry in the sense of education. And I feel like that's what needs to be addressed and what I would like to address personally. So I hope that's answered your question. I hope so. But thank you very much.
Thanks for the question, Riley. Any other questions?
Hello everyone, I am Nevzat from Istanbul. I am a photographer, also creator of NFT community. I am so happy to be here to listen to all of you guys. This is really an incredible moment for us. Blockchain is a different time, and people focus on the Tezos, Ethereum, and any other Solana blockchain. My works, including many museums collection, especially the Boston Fine Art Museum collection in US in 2010. Also, Jean Michel is one of my great collectors. Thanks for his great support to me. What do you think generally about the focus on the blockchain, the artist and collector? NFT is NFT. But why people this time focus on the Solana blockchain?
Who wants to take this, Ismail? I'm looking at you, or Jean-Michel? Yeah.
Oh, actually, I think it's beyond photography, generally speaking. So actually, it's funny because we are living in a world where, blockchain is a technology infrastructure, and there are different infrastructures. There is Solana, Ethereum, Bitcoin, BNB, whatever. But actually, it's beyond technology. There's community, there's currency behind it. And for me, it's extremely difficult to say it just in 30 or 60 seconds, but imagine that it's like different continents with different pricing power and different, you know, currencies. And because all of a sudden something happened on Solana that makes that a lot of people want to invest in the country, on the continent of Solana, the price of the currency goes up. That makes that the people who are living there, who bought assets in Solana, get richer. And because they are richer, then they will invest part of their benefits and their wealth into art. And that's probably what happened in Solana in the Q4 23, because the price of Solana, the token, went like 3-4x in a couple of months. And that's basically a lot of things happen. Because honestly, from a supply perspective, in terms of quality of art, there was not so many things. But that's interesting, because all of a sudden, a lot of great artists decided to mint on Solana. So why not? I don't have any firm opinion pro or against for now. Because again, as I told many times, my goal is to see things getting into museums in a decade. So Solana might be a good technology medium for that. Maybe not. We'll see in the next couple of months or more.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, we're going to wrap it up there. I know some people have lunch and probably you all want to take a break outside of this beautiful room, get some air. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, guys.